It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaidan, presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
Another edition of the Healthy Woman Show. Dr. Zaidan, we're thrilled you're joining us again. Some important health months are coming upon us, so we're pleased to have some of your colleagues who will be joining us today to discuss ovarian cancer awareness, PCOS awareness, genetic testing, even breast cancer awareness.
Well, part of the mission of Women's Excellence is always, to strive on preventative care. We believe that everything starts with medicine in prevention. We can prevent a problem, we're far better off. So that's why we always look towards that. And, there's some great technologies that are coming in place now where we can actually, do some simple things, blood tests and risk assessments in our office to actually decrease cancers in the future. And reducing the risks for certain cancers and monitoring them and screening people a little bit more frequently for those things can oftentimes change everything that we're doing from a medical perspective. Meaning that when we find things earlier, we treat them better. And I think everyone knows that. Everyone knows early diagnosis is the key. And doing some preventative care and also some early diagnostic care is everything about that. On top of that, we've got polycystic ovarian syndrome, which can lead to other problems. We have our nurse practitioner, Casey Grusnick, on the show today. And we also, in general, we'll be talking with some really genetic experts, so to say.
And so today's show is going to be about the importance of preventative care and also reducing risk. Stay with us here as the Healthy Woman Show unfolds on WJR. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Zaidan, our co-host. Dr. Zaidan, this is such an important show because we're going to talk about two important topics that are very near and dear, I think, to a lot of women when they talk about their personal health, ovarian cancer and breast cancer. Those are two very frightening diagnoses if you get anything like that. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the prevalence of ovarian cancer, the prevalence of breast cancer.
Well, the number of these types of cancers, they're relatively prevalent cancers. If you look at the number of cancer deaths in 1999, there was 13,627 deaths. If you look at it all the way up into 2017, 14,193 deaths. So ovarian cancer, really affects about 1-2% of the population. And, that's a significant number. So we ultimately we're getting more population in the United States and we're going to have more cancers. And it's really important that we start to really screen for that because ovarian cancer, unfortunately, doesn't have a great survival rate. But it has the best survival rate when it's found in its first stage. So if we can find an ovarian cancer in stage one, we have a much better survival rate and a much better, more what we call morbidity and mortality rate. So it's very important that we prevent those cancers because once you find them when they're late, it's very difficult to treat. Breast cancer is a little bit different than that, in that we still want early detection and early prevention. But if you look at breast cancer, we know that that's a very prevalent cancer because we see people with it all the time. And in 1999, again, I just chose to use a 20-year interval. In 1999, we found 196,628 cancers. In 2017, we found 250,520. To me, that means as a physician, we're finding more cancers, and most likely we're finding more cancers in early stages, right? So you're going to increase the amount of actual cancers found if you find them earlier, right? Because in 1999, we may not have found them until they were late cancers. Now we're finding them much earlier. That's exactly the direction that we want to go, and the technology's helping us do that. And that's what's so exciting about this show today.
Dr. Zane, let's take each one of these cancers and break them down just a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about ovarian cancer, because you talked about finding the cancer early leads to better outcomes. I've always heard that ovarian cancer is difficult to diagnose because the symptoms just don't show themselves. So what is it, what do we have to look for as women for ovarian cancer? What are the things we need to be aware of?
Well, it's always been said that if you have ovarian cancer symptoms, it's probably too late to treat. That's been the commonsensical approach on the, you know, amongst the population. But when you say symptoms, many people have subtle symptoms that they may have been able to find if they found them early. So we have such a widespread use and ability to use ultrasonography now. We have such an ability to use laboratory services, and doctors are relatively prevalent in especially our local area, but even in the United States in general. So if you have symptoms of some discomfort or pain, you should really be evaluated quickly. And then you should always have exams. You know, there's a push towards, you know, doing pap smears every 2 to 3 years. I think we've talked about this on the show before. I'm not a huge proponent of that push, because I think what it's done is it's made people think that they don't need to come to the doctor for a long period of time. Some people would think that's self-serving, as a doctor, I want to see them every year. The truth of the matter is that's not the case. The truth is that if we don't see them on a regular basis, we're not going to pick up those little subtle things that ultimately might lead to an earlier stage diagnosis. That's what concerns me the most about increasing the frequency between screening and examining people, is that if somebody says, well, I have been getting a slight pain near my right side, and I examine them and I feel a little bit of what I would consider fullness, right? I do an ultrasound and I find an ovarian cyst that's 4 centimeters. I can maybe initiate some laboratory testing that might ultimately lead towards surgical intervention that would remove that ovary when it is in an early stage. And that's exactly where we want to do, because even though we have, you know, found that we still have 14,000 cancers, what we want is we want to find 14,000 cancers, but those cancers we're probably not going to change how many we find. But what we can find is how many people actually die from those cancers, right? And especially in a time like COVID-19, where people are talking about death rates, right? And people are hearing that so much, we really want to decrease our death rate from ovarian cancer. And the way to do that is early protection, early detection, early examination when somebody has symptoms.
Dr. Zaden, very quickly, as we are closing in on this portion of the show, but can you just touch on breast cancer and breast cancer awareness? I know sometimes there's some controversy now about when and how often to get a mammogram and how early to get a mammogram. What do you tell your patients?
You know, I recommend yearly screening mammograms still to everyone. I know there's a lot of data out there. I don't mean to be controversial. I don't mean to talk about insurance coverage and all those things, but it doesn't make sense to me to find a cancer at 2 or 3 years out. Remember, when we do the test, right, people are concerned if they don't get their results in a week. Isn't that true, Marie? When you have gone for a mammogram, or you know a friend that's got a mammogram, if they don't have the results in a week, they're concerned, right? Well, think about it this way. If you get a cancer, I'm going to put it to you in very simple terms. If you get a cancer that begins in January of 2020, and you don't get examined again till January of 2022, because that's what a 2-year interval would be, right? If that cancer started in February of 2020, it's going to be there for 23 months before you've screened it. And that may be just the difference between you not getting the treatment that you need and decreasing your overall survival from the cancer, and certainly creating much more morbidity. So I don't know if a year is the exact time that we should screen. There is no data on that. I suspect that if a year was 370 days, we'd still use a year, right? But it's probably the time period that will allow us to detect something when we can do something about it. Meaning that some of these cancers may only be 6 months old when we find them in a year. And that's the important thing.
We are talking to Dr. Jonathan Zaden here on the Healthy Woman Show on WJR. When we come back, what does genetic testing tell us, and what role does it play in our health? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. As always, Dr. Jonathan Zaden of Women's Excellence alongside. Dr. Zaden, we talked so much about the importance of getting a diagnosis early when we're talking about certain cancers. And that, of course, means testing. And there's lots of different types of testing.
Well, you know, I think we're going into a new era of medicine where we're going to start to preemptively identify those people who are at best risk or at most risk. And the way to do that is to look at, you know, the foundation of how we are built, right? To look at our architectural plan, and that is really genetics. And if we can learn more about our own genetics, we'll know who has more of a propensity to get a cancer. And ultimately, that will lead us to early detection like we just talked about. And so, you know, I think that we just have some great opportunities here. The technology has just expanded so much in this arena. And I thought it was very important to have somebody on the show to talk about what's going on in the current field of genetics, because I think many, many of our women would be interested in what are the genetics that we, you know, genetic evaluations we can do for breast, ovarian cancer, and even other cancers.
And of course, we promise to make this all easy to understand when we're talking about genetics. I think a lot of people say, oh, I don't know if I could grasp all of that. But we have Nicole Lambert, the president of Myriad Genetics Laboratories, joining us today. The lab that first discovered the primary genes for hereditary breast and ovarian cancer. And before joining Myriad, she had served as the genetic counselor in the Houston Medical Center. In the last 30 years, Myriad has accelerated innovation and advanced the science of genomics and the precision medicine with a focus on women's health. Welcome, Nicole, to our show. We're so glad you could join us today. It had to be an interesting experience for you. I understand recently you went through the process of actually being a patient to experience what others experience when they come for genetic testing.
I did. Yeah. Thank you so much for hosting me. It's a pleasure to be here. And first of all, I want to say that the decision to undergo testing and the timing with which you undergo testing and the decisions that you make afterwards are really very, very personal ones. And I support all women in that journey and all the different choices that they make along the way. You know, for me, I knew that there was breast cancer in my family, but we didn't really look like your typical hereditary cancer family. You know, we didn't have many, many, many people affected at young ages. We didn't have a lot of deaths from cancer. You know, there were a couple of people that had breast cancer at later ages, which, you know, breast cancer is a common disease. So it really didn't look all that suspicious. But what changed things for me was a conversation that I had with my aunt on Christmas Eve a couple of years ago. She had just been diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. And she had had a completely normal mammogram just 6 months before. And, you know, she was young. And she was talking to me about all the things that she thought she was going to miss because of this diagnosis, all the milestones in her children's life. Her youngest son was just about to finish high school, and she was really thinking about whether she would make it to his graduation. And in having that conversation, I just realized, you know, I never, never, never want to have this conversation myself. And I knew that it was time for me to undergo the testing. I also, you know, I'm fairly young and healthy. I knew that if the risk was really high and I needed to undergo a prophylactic surgery, that I was young and healthy enough to do that. So it all just sort of came together for me, and it was really the right time to move forward with testing.
That's, you know, what I think, Nicole, what you hear, I hear that every day from patients. I mean, they're fearful, especially when they have a friend who's been diagnosed, or you know, it's not so much their moms when their moms are diagnosed, because typically, you know, by the time I'm seeing them, their mothers are older, and there's more of an expectation that there's something that's going to happen, and this is one of those things. But it's when they have a colleague, a friend, yes. or maybe someone even younger than them, they yes. go through that same experience. And, you know, I hear so many people, well, you know, when I offer them testing, I'll say, you know, why don't you get that, you know, we can do that testing for you here, right? And they'll say, well, I might just do it. I read about it online. I saw there's some place where I can do it online for $99 or whatever. What's the difference between what we're offering? I mean, I know what it is, but what, you know, from your perspective, what is the difference so people can understand what that is? Because I think people right now are really fixated on finding out what their genomic tree is, but that's really not telling them about cancer. You know, I mean, right. so tell us a little bit from your perspective as a president of the company doing genetics. Why should we use you? You know, why are these patients going to come and say to me, yes, Dr. Zayden, I'll get it through Myriad and not just do it $99?
Right. Absolutely. Great question. And I think a lot of patients find that stuff online. And, you know, if you're doing testing for recreational purposes to find out about your ancestry, or you really don't have a medical indication, you're just screening for a bunch of things and you don't plan to make real decisions based on information, I think that's fine. But if you have a family history and you have a medical indication for testing, which, you know, those medical indications have broadened quite a bit in the last few years, the American Society of Breast Surgeons has said that every woman with a history of breast cancer has a medical indication for testing. So if you have a medical indication, a strong family history, you want to get clinical grade testing that is actionable and you can be confident in decisions that you make for your healthcare based on that information.
And this is exactly, Nicole, this is exactly what I tell them. I say, you know, your insurance company in most cases is going to cover this, right? And, yes. you know, in many cases, I'll set them up with one of, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have a telehealth, right, is what everybody yes. talks about it. We call it specialty virtual care here at Women's Excellence. So I'm fortunate enough to have that ability. So we can set them up with one of our nurse practitioners to talk about these types of things. So, you know, it works, you know, very well. So it can be done very easily. They don't even have to come back to the office and they can actually have a full discussion so that we can get the information that they need so that, you know, their insurance company can approve that test, you know, based on their risk factors, you know. But if there was one thing, I think one thing that you could tell people as the president of Myriad Genetics, what is the one thing that you wish that women knew more about doing genetic testing?
The one thing I wish people knew is that this is really about empowerment, right? And switching from fear to empowerment. I hear women say to me, you know, well, I'm not sure that I would do a mastectomy if it was positive. So why should I even undergo the test? It's about getting the knowledge about your healthcare. There are plenty of women who say that they would never do X, Y, and Z, but once they actually have the test result, they think very differently about it. And so give yourself the chance to get the information. You, whatever you choose to do about it, and whenever you choose to make those decisions, it's all up to you, but get the information. You're worth it. You deserve it. This is your healthcare.
I think you have hit the nail on the head, per se, when you say that, because it's so true. People, you know, have fear. We've said this a million times. The only thing to fear is fear itself, right? Mm-hmm. And so with the exception of people that have excessive anxiety, I typically, you know, we will refer them for genetic testing, because I think that, you know, having a little more knowledge allows you to be actionable, like you said. And you know, you can't really do anything unless you have knowledge. Knowledge is power. And, you know, this gives us that ability to order an MRI for those people, right? When the insurance wouldn't cover an MRI. So they get a better test, maybe for screening. It gives us the ability for us to do other specialized blood tests, maybe looking for things in advance and maybe do more clinical examinations, which sometimes people desperately need because they're not doing their own self-breast exams and so forth. So, I mean, there's so many things. We talked about early detection in this show earlier, and I, you know, this is all about it, and I'm so thankful to have had you on the show. I mean, this is a really great, you know, way for women to understand from somebody who's doing this every day. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step, right, is just understanding your risk. So I think, you know, you have a link on your website. We do on ours to Hereditary Cancer Quiz, www.hereditarycancerquiz.com, or they can go to your website if they're local in your area and understand if they meet criteria and if testing might be right for them.
Definitely appreciate you being on the show. We'll promote you, you know, in your testing through Women's Excellence. But more importantly, we'll promote preventative care. And that's what you've told us all about. We will empower more women to do exactly what you said. Find out about their disease earlier, get it treated.
Nicole, if I could just ask you before we let you go, I'm just curious, is there ever a time when people come in for genetic testing and that perhaps they get more information than they bargained for and maybe are left with more decisions to have to make? Is that possible? Or more questions than answers is, I think, what I'm trying to ask you.
You know, the testing that we do is very focused on cancer risk. And so I would say that's less of a concern with the testing that we do because, you know, you've come in for a hereditary test about breast cancer. You're not going to incidentally find out that you have this very high risk for cardiovascular disease or something like that because the testing that we do is very targeted and focused. When you do a larger panel, like Dr. Zeta mentioned earlier, with, you know, a consumer test that's recreational, you could find out just about anything, right? You could find out a different ancestry that you thought you had. You could find out a risk for a disease that you never really intended to find out about. But the testing that we're talking about is very focused on what you the question that you came in asking.
Nicole Lambert is the president of Mira Genetics. And of course, Dr. Zeden at Women's Excellence has the opportunity for you to get genetic testing through this company. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nicole. We really appreciated your information.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. Dr. Jonathan Zeden alongside, as he always is, from Women's Excellence. Dr. Zeden, just if we could just close the loop on our last interview very quickly. I know one of the questions that we were didn't get in about security and information security when people get genetic testing done is, if I get genetic testing done, is it out on the internet for all to see?
Well, I think that was one of the things that didn't really come out, but I had actually talked to Nicole about this, you know, prior. And we understand that, you know, when people get genetic testing online at these services, they're getting a lot of information. And I think a lot of patients are very fearful that information might, you know, kind of be breached and that they could be, you know, lumped into other patients as a result of those breaches. That's not the case with Myriad Genetics. It's a very, very private medical record that you have. So we're looking for a specific piece of medical information, and that medical information is protected under the Health Information Protection Privacy Act. So, you know, it's HIPAA protected. So a little bit different than when you're buying something commercially online. So,
Dr. Zeden, I know one of the topics you wanted to touch upon today is September being Polycystic Ovary Syndrome Awareness Month, and we want to bring in a special guest to talk a little more about this. Casey Grusnick is a nurse practitioner at Women's Excellence. Hi, Casey.
Thanks. Yeah, polycystic ovarian syndrome is so common. So what it is, it's usually many different symptoms that contribute. It's not one specific thing that we're always looking for. It's really a hormonal or an endocrine condition that can vary pretty widely for women. So it's kind of like an umbrella diagnosis. Some symptoms, like Dr. Zeden said, probably one of the key features we see are irregular periods, irregular bleeding, or long stretches without periods. So that's probably one of the most common things we see in the office. Other things we see sometimes hormonal abnormalities like excess testosterone. Sometimes we see women who have cysts on their ovaries if we do a pelvic ultrasound, acne, obesity, infertility is a big one. So there's a lot of different symptoms we're looking for when we're talking about PCOS in the office.
So when you're seeing a patient in the office, I think you're probably working them up similar to when I work a patient up. You see a patient that's maybe overweight, or they've begun a time period where they've accelerated weight gain, and then they maybe have some hair growth. We call it hirsutism, right? And then their periods are irregular. Is that when you start to initiate laboratory testing?
Yeah, so a lot of times people will come in, and it's really common to see women or girls come in and have said, you know, I've been having these symptoms for years, and they haven't really gotten any answers, and either they've been just kind of misdiagnosed or just not diagnosed at all. So then when we start seeing these clinical features in the office, we start thinking about a workup, and most of the time we're thinking about doing labs and a pelvic ultrasound, and maybe tracking their periods and seeing kind of what exactly is going on. So I probably see someone in the office every day who is either has clinical symptoms of PCOS or who has been previously diagnosed with PCOS.
Everybody always talks about PCOS, and I'll just throw this out there for our listeners, and that, you know, it really is polycystic ovarian syndrome. So meaning poly, meaning multiple cysts on the ovary itself. And what we see are these ovarian capsular cysts. So they almost look like little, round circles around the periphery of the ovary. And we see that on ultrasound. And so many times, right, we'll see people that come in that have the symptoms of polycystic ovarian who had an ultrasound and had multiple little cysts, and nobody's done anything about them. Do you see that from time to time, like when, you know, people have gone to the emergency room or whatever, and they'll tell you, yeah, I had some cysts on my ultrasound? Is that something that, that you feel like people should really look into in more detail? Because many times they tell me that the ER doctor told them, well, I had some cysts, but they're fine. But they still have these problems, right? The weight gain, the regular periods, and so forth.
Yeah, and so it's really important for women to kind of know what's going on with their bodies. And a lot of times they have gotten some kind of pelvic ultrasound or some other kind of imaging, and they say, oh, there's a cyst there, don't worry about that. But then they have all these other symptoms, you know, that can be really affecting their life too. So it's not something really to not worry about. You know, we want women to kind of know what's going on with their bodies and know there's management and options out there. And this, you know, this isn't really normal, and down the line, especially for, you know, younger women, it can go on to, you know, lead to other pretty serious health conditions. So we know that women who have PCOS, you know, they're at a higher risk for cardiovascular disease, diabetes, insulin resistance, endometrial cancer, high cholesterol. So it's not something that should just really be pushed aside. So we want to, you know, in September especially, make it, make women more aware of this condition out there that's so common.
So if we were going to try to get a call to action, I always like to have a call to action for patients on our show. So if we were going to have a call to action, what would that be? Who are the people that we should be telling that need to be evaluated? Because I know every time we do a show like this, I'll get a phone call from someone. Sometimes it's family members. Sometimes it's a friend. Sometimes it's a friend's sister that they give my cell phone number to, and they'll say, so I want to know, should I be tested for this? Who should be tested?
So I think probably the number one thing, like I mentioned before, is irregular periods. Like if you're having irregular periods, you feel like it's not normal, or you're going really long stretches without a period, that's not normal. And that should, prompt some workup in the office, whether it's through blood work or ultrasound or whatnot. So I would say that would probably be the main thing. But also, you know, back to the other, other symptoms that I mentioned. So if women are struggling with acne or even mood changes we see really commonly with PCOS, that would be another thing. Weight is another big one. So if they feel like their weight is just shot up, or they're really struggling to lose weight, those would be other women that we, you know, would want to look into this a little bit further.
And how simple is the testing? I mean, I know what it is, right? So, I mean, you know, all you're doing is a blood test, right? A quick evaluation. And many times with these patients, I'm doing a very precursory clinical exam. It may not even be a vaginal exam, you know, per se. It's not necessarily have to be invasive. And then an ultrasound just to kind of identify the gynecologic structures, which most people, if they're having irregular periods, really would want to know anyway. So as a whole,
sure,
pretty simple workup. Is there anything that you do as a main treatment modality for people that have polycystic ovarian?
So I really try and talk about, you know, healthy living as kind of the gold standard. And then if we need to move on from, you know, diet and exercise and weight management, there's lots of other management options out there. At Women's Excellence, we really try and tailor it to the woman and, you know, kind of a personalized approach to their symptoms and what their long-term and short-term goals are. So medications, you know, watching hormone levels. So there's lots of different avenues for management.
So it's pretty simple for the patient.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of times we're making a clinical diagnosis even before, you know, we have labs or a pelvic ultrasound. But it's pretty quick and easy if we need to do those other workups.
I was interested that, you know, we've gotten to the point where there's so much polycystic ovarian syndrome that there's an awareness month.
I mean,
not that we didn't know it, but nobody's really ever brought light to this. But I think it's really important that we're, you know, finding these people, because it really leads to infertility, and it can lead, you know, it can lead to, like you said, endometrial cancer and just the metabolic aspects of polycystic ovarian syndrome themselves. I mean, if we can cure that and, you know, and treat it appropriately and get them to a more healthy lifestyle, especially with, you know, what they're challenged with this disease, I think they ultimately do a lot better. And I think, you know, the work you do by seeing all these patients is phenomenal. And I think that, you know, it's great that it's turned into an awareness month. That's the biggest thing is I hadn't really heard about it until, you know, over the, you know, recent time period. And I'm glad that it has, because I think a lot starts right with the polycystic ovarian.
Yep. September is a big month for women's health.
Again, September is polycystic ovary syndrome awareness month. Casey Grusnik, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Casey, a nurse practitioner
at Women's Excellence. Thanks for the illumination on a topic, again, that both of you have said we really haven't talked a lot about. Thank you.
No, we've never talked about it on the show, have we, Marie? I don't believe so.
I don't. No. So. Thanks again, Casey. See you soon, I hope.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us. Women's Excellence on the Healthy Woman Show continues here on WJR. Dr. Zayden, in closing out the show, I know there's something that you wanted to talk briefly about, and that's research that's being conducted at Women's Excellence.
As we talked earlier, I want to add to clinical data. I want to do studies at Women's Excellence that will allow our patients to, you know, add to the clinical repository of data. Obviously, it's all privacy protected and so forth. Nothing that we would do differently for them that they didn't know about. But, you know, there's things like, you know, people have brought to me, you know, like sexual satisfaction with vaginal estrogen, for example. We want to know, you know, what does the data really show at the level of a local community, not the data from the drug company. So we're going to do a study on that coming up. We're also going to do a study, you know, because of ovarian cancer and breast cancer awareness month, it's kind of convenient to say, but we're doing a study on ovarian cancer and prevention mechanisms using genetics. So that's another thing that we're going to be starting. So I think it's just important that we add to, you know, the clinical data that help doctors make clinical everyday decisions for their patients. And then I'm really proud of that at Women's Excellence. And, you know, I think that we're going to start to, you know, really let people know that, you know, they can be a part of this study. Because so many people say to me when they have a certain disease process or a certain problem, they say, I wish I could let other people know. Well, that has resonated to me. And now I want to go forth and let people know. And I want to do that with data. I don't want to do it with a conspiracy theory. I want to do it with data. So,
and we hear so much of this recently, I think it's because of the age we're in, COVID, of course, that data should drive medical decisions. And that's really what you're getting at here. I know that you're offering people to sign up or to get more information about this. And you can do that at womensexcellence.com/research. Again, womensexcellence.com/research. If you'd like to be a part of this or get more information about it, Dr. Zayden.
Yeah, we're just starting it, and I'm very proud of it, because I feel like this is a time where, you know, all of us at Women's Excellence can help, you know, guide what people are doing for real people. Again, you know, our focus is always real people, the right diagnosis at the right time with the right treatment. And, you know, we say that over and over again. And this really, you know, lends to that specifically, because we're going to look at things that really bother real people, and it won't be biased at all by any FDA studies or drug companies or anybody along those lines. This is just going to be real data. Like, you know, 30% of people got better, and that's, you know, what we saw. So that's, it's exciting for us to do that. So
closing out, let's talk very quickly about how your office is handling COVID and all of the things that are going along with that.
You know, this is such a controversial topic. I'm going to be taping a video about this. But really, I think, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I think we've now gotten to the point where we understand the virus a lot more. And I think that, you know, some of the treatments that we're doing, and when I say treatments, you know, some of the social dynamics that are happening right now are a result of our initial fear, and they've persisted. But some of the data, I think, that's coming out, and again, to choose the data, you know, we've went from, you know, having, you know, early on, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of cases where we felt that our hospital systems might be overwhelmed, and we heard all that data. And now we have over 6 million cases in the United States, and our hospital systems aren't overwhelmed. And so my biggest thing from a women's excellence perspective is to stay away from all these theories and all this conspiracy and all the politics, and just use some common sense approaches. I mean, we need to make sure that our patients aren't getting more anxious, they're not getting more fearful, and that we're protecting the people that we need to protect. So if somebody's at high risk for the virus, we need to make sure that we're paying close attention to this. This virus is real, but we're not seeing the widespread hospital inundation that we thought we might see. And some of the early fears that we have already been allayed. Again, 6 million people in the United States, you know, as of the beginning of September, there's even more probably today, and our hospital systems are not overwhelmed. And people need to go back to getting their routine medical care and getting back to their lives, using protection and you know, definitely understanding that this is a real virus that has real ramifications. But clearly it is not as bad as we thought early on, or with 6 million people, we'd see that.
And certainly a good dose of common sense is what the doctor ordered, right?
I think that we have to look at this, you know, a little bit more from the perspective of, you know, many people tell me they're so fearful and they've changed their whole lives, but yet they haven't, they don't even know anybody that's even had it. And so, you know, we have to kind of think to ourselves is, you know, maybe what we were fearing wasn't as bad. And that is a good thing. And we just don't seem to be hearing that right now. We're not hearing about the good about the virus. If there's more cases, and people aren't as affected as badly, and the hospitals aren't overwhelmed, that's a good thing. That doesn't mean that the virus isn't there. That doesn't mean that we don't have to pay attention to any social distancing. That doesn't mean that we don't have to pay attention to our family members that are high risk. It just means that we need to, you know, kind of relax our own fears a tad.
Dr. Zaden, always a pleasure to have you alongside. Once again, Dr. Jonathan Zaden, Women's Excellence. We'll see you again next month. Stay well, everybody.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.